ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। We are now studying the fourth chapter of Vedanta Treatise, where we are in this topic, Elements of Right Living. The chapter name is called Code of Living. In this, the discussion is right now on the topic, Elements of Right Living. Every human being is made up of a physical body, mind and intellect, which is enlivened by the divine principle, the Atman within. So when we talk about the elements of right living, what are the three elements of right living at the body level, mind level, intellect level, is what we need to understand. At the body level, it is service. At the mind level, it is love. And the intellectual level, it is knowledge or wisdom. Now, last week we had done out of these three, we have done the element of right living at the physical level, which is service. See, as we start gaining the knowledge of the higher, the insecure feeling reduces or should reduce. Before you have the knowledge of the self, before your mind has been expanded, you will have that very, very insecure feeling. You know, so as a result, you would be more of a taker. You would be more of an aggrandizer. You will be more of a hoarder, no? Hoarding. Because to feel comfortable, to feel secure, you will do this. Like they say, no? Animals generally don't hurt human beings, but out of insecurity, out of fear, they may attack. So, it's exactly like that. When you lack the higher knowledge, we function at the level of ego. And ego is a fake entity. It actually doesn't exist. So, something which is not true, if you want to maintain it, you have to do a lot of things to maintain that falsehood, isn't it? Even in life, if you have said something which is false, and you want to make sure that it is maintained, you have to go through a lot of things. It's not easy. You have said the truth, then you don't have to worry. But if your life is based on falsehood, to retain, to maintain that, it's not easy. You know? So, it's at any level, even at the physical level, when you live, if you live straightforward, no problem. But supposing you are conniving, all that you are doing, then you need to really do a lot more thing to maintain it. That's what adds to your stress. So similarly, when the knowledge comes in, your heart starts expanding. That sense of insecurity reduces. You start giving more compared to before. You become a giver, not a taker. Definitely at the attitude level, which will result in your actions. So service. Otherwise it will be selfish, self-centered, egocentric. So that's what he was talking about. From the time we are born, we've been constantly receiving. And we must become aware of this fact that we are constantly receiving. And whoever becomes aware, they will have this attitude of paying back, giving back, you know, in whatever way you can give back. So all your actions would be propelled with this attitude of repayment. That's called service. In fact, once you understand Vedanta, you will move from save SAVE to ACVA, seva. E and A gets replaced here and there, that's all. Initially, you are only interested to save for future. Because when you are so much identified with ego, you will be thinking about your future. Your mind will be thinking about the future. But as you start gaining this knowledge, you are not interested in saving. You move to another concept called spillover. See, when the insight starts becoming more and more fortified and stronger, we studied this in the beginning of this book, the first chapter. As a person spiritually evolves, the dependence on the world reduces. That's how you find out. It is not as if you will not contact the world, but the dependence reduces. Supposing you needed the phone for, let's say, 8 hours in a day, if you are becoming a little more stronger within, the dependence would reduce from 8 to maybe 4 hours or 3 hours. It has to happen at all levels. So when your dependence reduces, when your needs reduce, requirements reduce, whatever you are earning, there will be a lot of spillover. It's not that you are forcing yourself somehow to save the money for future. That's not the idea. But discuss, no. A person, when his or her desires are less than the assets, he or she is rich. If the desires are more than the assets, then you are poor. So when you are spiritually evolving, when your insight is expanding and becoming stronger, then the requirements and needs reduce. So when the needs reduce, automatically there is a lot of spillover. So in fact, you may have more than the other fellow who is only living to somehow save for future. This is not because your mind is wanting to somehow hoard. You see the difference. So when he says element of right living is service, it's not that whatever you have you give away and then you lie on the road. It's not to be understood from that angle. In anything and everything that you do, you want to do seva, service, with that bhav, with that attitude. How it can help the other person. So this will elevate you in life, you know. So that's what he's saying. The first element of right living at the physical level is service. The opposite of it is selfish aggrandizement, taking. As a result, the quality of life becomes very poor. When the inside is not strong, you can't do service. It's not possible. Even if you do service, through that you will be expecting something or the other. To be able to do service expecting nothing, like he says in Bhagavad Gita, you know, you need to be grown a little bit. So therefore, he says, the first element of right living at the physical level is service. Then at the emotional level, it is love. So please, Shweta, read from that paragraph. The second element of right living is love.
The second element of right living is love. While the physical body engages in action, let your mind embrace the world with love. Your emotions coalesce into a mass of universal love. Love is realizing your identity with the world, your oneness with the whole. Failing which, you are lost in an island of your own. You segregate yourself from others. You suffer the sorrow of separation, isolation.
So, love is nothing but a feeling of oneness. It is nothing but identification. When you say love, love is nothing but identification. You identify with the other being. You identify with a common denominator. You identify with the common denominator. Now, we all can be from different parts of India, but we all identify as students of Vedanta. The moment we focus on that aspect which is common, then the differences dissolve. That is called love. So that's what he says. While the body is engaged in action doing service, your mind should be embracing this feeling called love, which is nothing but feeling of oneness. And this love is universal. It is not preferential. When it becomes preferential, it's called attachment. When love becomes preferential, it's called attachment. If you say love, it is universal. Not only that, you say love, it is unconditional. I love you as you are. I love you as you are. You understand? Only if you are catering to me, to the extent you are catering, I love you. The moment catering stops, I don't love you. Then it's not love. That's not what you call as love. That is conditional. That is attachment. Therefore, love means universal, love means unconditional, and love will bring peace within and harmony without. Attachment will bring agitation within and disharmony without. These are small differences I'm mentioning to you. You know? So, that's why he says you must develop love. Start focusing on the common denominator, the permanent aspects. If the attention is purely on the body, mind, intellect level, then it won't be bringing oneness. Some difference or the other will be there. The moment the identification goes to the Atman level, that's permanent. That's deep. So love is very deep, whereas attachment is very, very superficial. As long as the catering is going on, you will say, I love you. The moment catering stops, that's it. So he says, love is realizing your identity with the world, your oneness with the whole, failing which you are lost in an island of your own. See, the moment you don't have love, then you are segregating yourself. You know, I am different, you are different. So you are compartmentalizing yourself. You are bringing a boundary, mental boundary. You segregate yourself from others. You suffer the sorrow of separation and isolation. So, when you have love, it is not as if you need to have love for others' sake. For your own sake, for your own good, you need to have love. Because if you do not have love, then you are egoistically drawing a boundary and segregating yourself. And whatever level you are segregating yourself, compartmentalizing yourself, to that extent, there will be disturbance, agitation, everything. There will be fear, isn't it? When you go to some other country, for example, if you go to Africa, and then you see those people there, native, they are dark and so tall and different looking, then you get that feeling, I am different from them, that fear. But the moment you come to your country, the sense of oneness is there, the insecurity is gone, the fear is gone. So, the more and more you identify at the level of ego, there is more and more insecure, fear, agitation, all these will be there. Therefore, he says, you will suffer the sorrow of separation and isolation. So, for your good, you must develop love. Then, of course, it will do a lot of good to the others also, to the society as well. See, even service, world is not in need of your service or my service. It will go on. It went on before we were born. It is going on now in spite of us. It will go on after we go also. It will continue. So many leaders of the past have come and gone in all the countries. Still everything is somehow going on. Things will carry on. But if we do service, if we have love, it is firstly very, very helpful and useful for us. We will lead a qualitative life. Peaceful and qualitative productive life. Therefore, he says, you must develop love rather than attachment. Continue, please.
Samuel Taylor Coleridge presents this truth effectively in his poem, The Rhyme of the Ancient Mariner. The poem narrates the experience of a mariner at sea. The mariner started his voyage with his heart full of love. He described the beauty of the creatures appearing in the sea. Everything turned out favorable. The ship sailed on merrily. Then came a change in the mariner's attitude. He lost love for his fellow creatures, even developing a bitterness contempt for them. One day, as the ship was sailing along the shore and as Albatross flew into it, the mariner drew his crossbow and shot it. Thereafter, he suffered a series of calamities at sea and was tortured with mental agony. Then came a change again in the mariner's attitude. Once again, he appreciated nature and her beautiful creatures. Love seeped into his parched bosom. His heart embraced his fellow creatures. He regained his harmony with nature, was happy again. Everything thereafter turned favorable. He returned to the peace and happiness of land. Coleridge epitomizes his great message in one verse. He prayeth well who loveth well, both man and bird and beast. He prayeth best who loveth best, all things both great and small.
So this small poem he's quoting here, called the Rhyme of Ancient Mariner, when his attitude changed from, love to attachment, when he started looking at things different from him, he drew that boundary mentally. At the mental level, when he drew that boundary, then he started facing a lot of challenges at the mental level within. When his attitude changed, life changed. So if we wish to change the quality of our life in our betterment, we need to work and start developing the universal love. So what do you have to do? You should start focusing on common denominators. You understand? Common denominators. Then you identify with that other person. When you identify with the other person, you will start looking on the good side of that person also. Not just the negative side. You understand? You will start looking at the good side of that person. So that it doesn't affect you, doesn't bother you. Same situations that happen in life. That is going to happen. But when your attitude has changed, the way you deal with it will be completely different. Even if somebody is behaving very badly with you, you know that, they have certain nature because of the way they're behaving like. So you will in fact pray for them. Oh God, help them to change. Help them to change to positivity. And there are certain people who are all the time only talk negative, negative, negative. So when you have a positive attitude, you will pray for them. So he says, pray for them not in an egoistic sense. You understand that, probably I had a better guidance in life. They lacked it. So I wish they also get such good guidance so that they can also start looking at the world this way. It's how we look at it. You understand? You can look at a person as an enemy, or you can look at a person with a different attitude. It's all to do with your inner change. That's what he's talking about. When he developed egoistic attitude, he confronted bitterness and all these emotions that he talks about, contempt and all. And if that changed, everything changed. And suddenly, everything changes. It's very interesting. Now, these IPL matches will start now. Already the women IPL has started. Now the men's will start. Now the last few years, they have been, I think it started 2007 or 8, something like that. Been going on for so many years now. Now all the cricketers are playing in all different teams. So many of them have become good friends. Earlier, if you see, there may be a lot of sledging and fighting and all that. Now things have become a little different. Because they've started moving with each other, they become more friends. They may have certain issues in the ground, but it's not as much as it used to be before. Now, they may be in different teams now. For example, England is playing against India now. They are two different teams. But within few days, when IPL will start, some of them will be playing in the same teams with each other. So then the way they look at them will be different. Isn't it? It's all here. We think it's there outside. But actually it's not outside. It is within us. It's here in our head. That's all he's trying to say. If only we deal with our mind and ego properly, we learn to deal with our mind and ego properly, if possible, go beyond it. If you cannot go beyond it, at least know how to deal with it. Then you will have a very, very qualitative life. So he says, he prayeth well, who loveth well. Both man, bird and beast. They also have a right to live in this universe, isn't it? In this place. Human beings have completely taken over this land. It's just incredible how much destruction we do to elephants and all that. All the animals basically. There has to be restrictions, otherwise the fishermen will use certain gadgets with which they will fish too much. They don't understand how it is bad for the sea. Similarly, destroying elephants, destroying animals. We go to the extent where we think this land is for us. This is because we lack that knowledge. When you understand it, then you understand, yeah, we also have a right to live in this universe just like you do. So when you really grow spiritually, it is almost impossible to live without damaging. So, minimum damage. As little damage as possible. You become so conscious. Whenever you are conscious, you will be conscious with your words, with your deeds, with your thoughts, everything. So he prayeth well who loveth well, both man, bird and beast. He prayeth best who loveth best all things, both great and small. What we call as great and small is from our angle, from a very relative angle. But we don't understand that that small also is very much needed for the whole thing to survive. Like a hair inside your nose, it protects the dust from going inside your body. It has a role to play. So therefore, you cannot say that, yeah, this is very small, useless. You can't think like it. Everything is nothing but an expression of divinity. Once you understand that, then you will start loving everything in spite of your personal likes and dislikes. The moment you start developing love, you will see the world is a mirror. Please understand. How you go and stand, it just reflects. If you stand with attachment, it reflects back with attachment. If you stand with love, it reflects back love. That's simple. Continue.
Thou shalt have no other god but love is the first law of Moses. People have violated the sacred law. Law is not a preferential attachment to beings. Love means identification with others, to feel exactly the same way as another does. Nothing more. What pleases others pleases you. What pains them pains you. Your pleasure and pain align with those of your fellow creatures. This is true love, a feeling that emanates from a pure mind, which keeps clear of distinction or demarcation, wherein you see yourself reflected in all. As you see your own self in different mirrors, with pure love you rise to greater spiritual heights. But when the same emotion of love turns selfish, it degrades you. You devolve. Remember, therefore, to rise in love, not fall in love.
He is using the terminology which we generally use, you know, fallen in love. He says, why do you fellows have to fall in love? Why don't you rise in love? See, love, though he says in between here, what pleases the other pleases you. This is very highly misunderstood. What pleases others pleases you doesn't mean you start doing things to please others. What he is trying to convey there is, when you have love, in fact you are a strong person. When you have attachment, you are a weak person. When you have love, you will have strength. You will only do what is good for them. You try to do what is good for them in a pleasing way. So he says, what pleases them pleases you. Means what is good for them you will do. You will put yourself in their shoes and you will do it. You understand? That's what he's trying to say here. In preferential attachment, you will do what is pleasing to you. In love, you will do what is good for the other. When you say what is good for them, see, you think about this. What is good for one person will also be good for another. What is pleasing for another need not be pleasing to you. So, for example, things that will help them to get back to health. I am not saying the same things you need to have. You may not have any disease, so don't have need it. But health is good for them, and when they are healthy, it's good for you also. Isn't it? If we had a physical class, and one fellow has got corona, what will we tell them? Yeah, please don't come to the class. You know? For your good also, for our good also. So, when you are healthy, it is good for you, it's good for everyone. Anything that is good, Shreya, is Shreya for everyone. But Preya need not be common for everyone. So therefore, in love, you will identify with that person and see what is good for that person and do it. You will try and do it in a pleasing way as much as possible. That's how it should be understood. What pains him pains you. Means if something is disturbing that person, it's not. So you do not want to do that. Why you want to do that? Though it may be pleasing to you, maybe pleasing, but don't want to disturb others. So therefore he says, you must develop love. But your pleasure and pain align with those of your fellow creatures. So basically, you will start living like a spoke in the wheel of life. Otherwise, my way or my way. Now, you understand that you are a small circle. You have to align with the big circle. And you beautifully align with the big circle and then you carry on. Otherwise, you will say everything has to go according to my way. And you will be constantly disturbed. And you will be disturbing others also. So that's why he says, a feeling that emanates from a pure mind, from a purified mind. You got to purify the mind. For purification purpose, the process is service, knowledge, charity practice, maunam, sense control, all these things you do to purify. Purification itself is a very big process. A lot of purification has to be done at the thought level, at the mind level, at the intellect level, at all levels. So therefore he says, it is a feeling that emanates from pure mind, which keeps clear of distinction or demarcation. That's why they say, love is blind, love is blind. When they say love is blind, it is blind in the sense, blind for what? It doesn't see the distinctions and demarcation. See, I had gone to Swami Ramana Maharshi's ashram, I think in 2016, 8 years ago. And I stayed there for two days. So, whoever stays there, you have lunch with them. So, there, the system is, everybody sits on the floor and eats. Those who have some back problem, you cannot sit on the floor. They are given some chair and table. Otherwise you sit on the floor and eat. Simple food in South India. Tiruvannamalai. It's a beautiful place. And Ramana Maharishi used to do that. He'll sit with anybody and everybody. People who work in the ashram doing labor job, they will also come and sit and eat. Everybody will sit and eat together. That's how it is. There is no such thing as, okay, you all eat first, then we will eat, nothing like that. So there is no distinction, no demarcation. You have a feeling of oneness. See, when you have a feeling of oneness, how will it manifest at workplace or even at home? You will criticize the person for the work. You will never criticize the worker. You are more right to criticize the worker. Of course, work you can. Even therefore you will do whatever has to be done. But you will never criticize the worker. So that's what he's trying to say here. You will see your own self in all different mirrors reflected. So then where is the question of hatred? There is no hatred. If you look at it emotionally, all of us are children of God. If you look at it intellectually, all of us are nothing but Atman in different names and forms. Then how can there be hatred to another being? Impossible. So if you really understand, there is no way you can hate anything. That's why the very first quality of a bhakta in the Bhagavad Gita is a advesha sarva bhuta, which means hate no being. You will not hate any being. You may love many people, but if there is somebody whom you hate, that means you are not a bhakta. You are not a bhakta. So if there are people whom you hate, you understand that you are still spiritually to grow. So with pure love, you rise to greater heights. But when the same emotion of love turns selfish, it degrades. So therefore, you must rise in love, not fall in love. Continue. The third element of right living, which is knowledge.
The third element of right living is knowledge. As the body serves and the mind loves, the intellect must seek true knowledge. The knowledge that distinguishes the spirit from matter, that discerns the eternal from ephemeral, the real from unreal, the knowledge which enables you to perceive the underlying divinity in all beings, the changeless substratum in the changing phenomena of this world. Such knowledge is derived through independent reflection and contemplation upon the truths laid out in scriptures. It is not mere erudition and scholarship in spiritual literature, but the assimilation and absorption of the knowledge embedded therein, the knowledge that reveals the self within. People have distanced themselves from the self. Unaware of their essential being, they are lost in ignorance. The ignorance of self manifests in three mental temperaments.
See, it's actually at the intellect level, you gain knowledge. When you say knowledge, Adi Shankara beautifully defines that in Tattvabodha. What is viveka? Discrimination. Discriminating between permanent and impermanent. Nitya, anitya, viveka, vichara. Nitya vastu kaha, anitya vastu kaha. In everything, when you do that analysis, you don't go by the anitya vastu, you go by the nitya vastu. You identify with the nitya vastu. When you identify with the nitya vastu, then you will have love. And when you have love, you have the feeling of oneness, you will be serving them because they are also you. You are actually serving yourself. So this service is automatic. It will happen automatically. Isn't it? So when you have this discrimination, this discrimination means not discriminating between black and white, not like that. Knowing clearly what is permanent, what is impermanent, what is eternal, what is ephemeral. So the moment you understand that, then you are identifying with the changeless entity in the person. So then there is love. Then out of love, there is service. So that's why we say, you must gain the knowledge. Knowledge is not, like he rightly says, erudition or scholarship. You have tremendous intelligence in a particular field, even in the field of Vedanta. So what? You are not able to identify with the permanent. You are only identifying with the impermanent. then you do not have knowledge. So it's not just discriminating between permanent and impermanent. Out of discrimination, you identify with what is permanent. And refuse to identify with what is impermanent. That is called knowledge. That's called jnana nishta. One who is established in knowledge. So you will not only have this clear buddhi, you also live it. You identify with it. Then all this naturally happens in you, spontaneously. You will have love, you will only be doing service. And the service is not that you go and do service separately as a thing that you need to do, like, you know, or the CSR activities. Oh, we do this CSR. Right? You have an industry, supposing, and the industry is polluting. Supposing it's unavoidable, it's a different thing. But due to certain negligence or whatever, it's going on polluting. And then from the 2%, you get so much profit. From the 2% of the profit, you do CSR, everything will become alright. It's not to be done like that mechanically. The moment you gain this knowledge, you will put in all the efforts to see that the pollution and everything will come down. If it's detrimental, you may even stop it for a while. Like what they do, you know, during this time, you cannot drive these cars. Sorry. These cars, diesel cars are not allowed. Like that, you know. In the interest of everyone, you will do that. That is called awareness. That's called expression of love. That's called service. That will be there in each and every service of action of yours. It's not like you will go and dig a well or something for some village, then only it is service. Every action, there will be this attitude of service. It's because of this knowledge. Because of knowledge, there will be identification and service. It will automatically happen. To the extent you are established in knowledge, to the extent there will be love, identification and service. It goes without saying. See, I remember in the academy, when I was, even now, they have these night rounds, you know, sometimes there are certain things, so two students, one student go at about 11:30 for a round, another student goes around 2:30 in the morning for a round. Of course, the watchman is there, so he comes out and he sometimes goes for a round with the watchman. So, one day it was my turn, I think it was early morning, 2 o'clock or 2:30 my turn was. So I came out of the hostel and then I was going around and suddenly I saw Swamiji coming. Swamiji also woke up, so he said, okay, let me also come out. He came out. So I saw him, then I started walking with him. When we were going around the ashram, our watchman, Vaman his name was, he was sleeping. So I said, Swamiji, this watchman is sleeping. And then I said, hey Vaman, wake up, I was shouting. Swamiji said, hey, leave it, leave it. Okay. Anyway, we both are awake, no? Poor fellow, I don't know how long he slept. When did he sleep last? He's probably very tired. Let him sleep. I still remember that very vividly. What Swamiji did that, you know. This happened some 30 years ago. But I remember very vividly. So, the thought, maybe he didn't sleep for some time. Let him sleep. That thought, if you have, how will you have any agitation? It's not possible. Now, don't take it beyond its scope and then try to confuse yourself. I'm not therefore saying, okay, let all the policemen sleep, let all the pro-holers maybe didn't sleep. I'm not saying all that. The thought, understand. Tomorrow you can deal with him. You know. So, if he continuously does like this, obviously he is not fit to be a watchman. Maybe we'll give him another job to come in the morning to do. So, but the point is that thought, that is all I want to convey. The thought, see from that person. Who knows? Many times it happens, you know, that people behave in a particular way. Because the inside is so shallow and hollow. When you have grown, you will see that. You get the benefit of doubt. You don't pounce and immediately start judging. But when we lack that, we start judging people. Immediately. Judging is fixing, you know, like they are this, that's it. It's like that. You should never do that. Because of that, we will only suffer. So that's what he's trying to say here. Third element is at the intellect level, which is to gain the knowledge. So certain practices you do at the physical level. Like you might have not evolved so much, but as a, you know, when you see in the family, the head of the family who should have been an evolved person, he or she will have certain rituals, and in the rituals they will do certain dhanam. And then the other people who are in the family, youngsters, they are also involved in such dhanam activity. You know? And that activity relatively quietens you. Then that will help you to gain knowledge. With that knowledge, then you will also grow. And you will also automatically have that charitable attitude, that service attitude in you. That's what is called putting yourself in other person's shoes. That's what he said. What pleases them, pleases you. All this will happen as the knowledge goes in. So these kind of practices are very conducive to gain the knowledge and digest it. And once digested, these practices become your natural tendency. Initially, maybe a practice. You are probably putting an effort and trying to develop it. But slowly, slowly, as you evolve, they become your spontaneous, natural tendency. So that's what he says. You've got to identify with the self within, which is the same in everyone. Then you'll identify with everyone and you'll be only involved in service. People have distanced themselves from the self. Unaware of their essential being, they are lost in ignorance. Ignorance of your true nature. And from that ignorance, the gunas have come. The three gunas. Sattva, rajas and tamas. When the ignorance is gone, you go beyond the gunas. You become guna atita. Triguna atita. You go beyond the gunas. But when you are ignorant, you will be stuck in gunas. It will either be sattva, rajas or tamas. All of us have these three temperaments. So, to be able to live in this world, you must understand how these gunas function. See, when we go to the zoo, you understand very well how the animals have, what kind of nature they have, qualities they have, characters they have, tendencies they have. You understand that? You love both the tiger and the deer equally. But you will not go and pat the tiger. But you will go and pat the deer. Though the love is same. You have love for both. It's not that you hate tigers, nothing like that. You love them. But you know their nature. So you will not pat the tiger. You only pat the deer. Similarly, to be able to relate, living is all about relating, isn't it? To be able to relate correctly, you need to do proper assessment. For that you should understand everybody is nothing but a bundle of gunas. So how these gunas manifest. And also we need to understand, since we are also this bundle of gunas, we need to increase the better guna in us and reduce the tamas and rajas. And that becomes the purpose of our life. Purpose of our life is to rise above tamas, to rajas, to sattva, and then go beyond the three gunas. This is all he discusses in this portion, the three temperaments. Continue.
The three temperaments. The mental temperament of human beings, known as gunas in Sanskrit, are of three types. Each has a distinct character of its own. A human is composed of all three gunas. They are known as tamas, inactive, rajas, active, sattva, transactive. Tamas is the state of thoughts in inertia, a mood of lethargy, indolence, indifference, indisposed to activity. a condition of sloth and sleep, with no intellectual conviction to pursue, nor emotional feeling to manifest. A person steeped in tamas lives a dull, inactive life, with hardly any response to the world.
So tamas is a state of mind which is inertia. Nothing but inertia, lazy, lethargic, indolent, heedless to consequence. All this is tamas. A condition of sloth and sleep with no intellectual conviction to pursue. He has no better purpose or ideas. You ask them, what is the purpose? No purpose. Then feeling, hardly anything. In a deep tamas. In a deeply tamasic, you are extremely indifferent. Not emotional feeling to manifest. And a person steeped in tamas at the physical level leads a very dull, inactive life. Very, very dull and inactive life with hardly any response to the world. See, if you think of these three as forces, you need, supposing there's constantly something is moving, that is also not good. Something has, some force has to bring it to rest. So there is a force which keeps it moving. There is a force which keeps it to bring it to rest. There's another force which balances both. All these three forces is what he's talking about as sattva, rajas, tamas. Sattva is balance. Rajas and tamas are two extremes. One is stagnation, which is tamas. Other is impulsive restlessness. You cannot all the time remain in rest. You cannot all the time remain in action. There has to be balance. So, this is how you need to understand this gunas. And these three are there in us. Many times what happens, tamas becomes too much. Sometimes rajas becomes too much. Got to bring it to balance, balance, balance. And that balance is sattva. Very much needed in life. So a person steeped in tamas will lead a dull life, no emotions, absolutely indifferent, and no higher purpose, no conviction, nothing. No looking forward to go and do something. Intellectually, emotionally, physically, at all levels, they lead a very ignorant, deluded life. Simply, rajas.
Rajas is the state of passionate, desirous and agitated thoughts. So when a person bristles with frenzied actions, leading to his involvement in the affairs of the world.
So, rajas is, like I mentioned to you, he calls it also as active. Active meaning desire ridden. Running, 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 running like a chicken without head. That sort of a mindset is called rajasic mindset, which is calling as passionate. See, don't go by the words, because sometimes people say, hey, don't you have to have passion? So, he's not saying from that angle. One who becomes restless with attachment to the desire and its fruit. That's all. So that's why he says desirous. As a result, constantly mentally disturbed, agitated, not peaceful. Bristles with frenzied action. Frenzied actions, you understand? It's like a dog. Sometimes when the dog is excited, the owner has left the dog for 2 days and come back. It's excited and runs, jumping here, there, patami, kaka. They will do everything. Like that, we are also doing. Why am I doing? What am I doing? Thing is thought about. That sort of a frenzied action that will come under rajas. Leading to his involvement in the affairs of the mind gets completely involved and attached in the world, which brings about agitations and disturbances. Such people cannot be peaceful. In fact, such people cannot churn out right action. Therefore, it becomes very difficult for them to succeed. But in the world, you will find these frenzy people succeeding because everybody who's striving in some form or the other frenzied. Amongst the frenzied people, these people who have succeeded better. That's all. But if you can really control it, rajas, bring a balance, then you, nobody can go beyond you in success, succeeding. Continue.
Sattva is the state of thoughts in equanimity, serenity, objectivity. When a person is poised, mature, contemplative, detached from worldly involvement and excitement, hence termed transactive.
A sattvic person is a more balanced person. Sattvic mind is a more balanced mind. So that's why it's equanimity, serenity, and it's able to watch, become a witness. And therefore, a person with sattvic mind has more control over it, himself, oneself, and others. To the extent you have control, you can, you know, manage. See, therefore, all the leaders need to develop this nature, this balance. We all want to be CEO of our life. Whether you are CEO of your business or not, you want to be CEO of your life, no? You want to direct your own thoughts. For that, you need to become more of a witness, objective. That is, that state of mind is called sattvic. Poised, mature, contemplated, detached, no involvement in the world. Meaning, no involvement does not mean not doing anything. Doing, but not mentally attached. It's called no involvement. A rajasic person is fully involved. See, for example, now if I ask you, what is the first thing you got to do? God forbid if there is fire in the classroom. What is the first thing you got to do? What would be the first thing?
Open the exit door and let your friends pass by and you pass by with them.
The first thing you have to do, of course, all this you have to do. The first thing is switch off your mains. Switch off your mains and then get on to opening the windows, calling the fire engine service, all that you do. Now you know all this. But when there is fire, let's say, God forbid, actually, you'll be frozen. You won't know what to do. You'll be completely frozen. It's really tough. During the time to be objective, during the time of difficulty to be objective is not easy. That's why they say, you know, very, very well-known surgeon cannot operate upon his own family members. Because he may not be able to be objective. Like he can be objective to others. All other patients is very objective. But when it comes to his own kith and kin, you don't know. There is no guarantee that he'll be objective. After opening up, supposing he faints, then what happens? So they say, listen, you are not loud only. Can't do that only for some. Not possible. So, this is very important, you know, to be objective, to be not involved. Only to the extent you are able to be objective, you can control and direct. A very good batsman, as you see, he will first observe and understand how the bowler is bowling. The length, the line, the speed, everything he will understand. How the ball is behaving, where the fielders are. After a few balls, he will first initially leave all the balls here and there or defend it. Then he is seeing the ball like a, you know, what do you call this? Pumpkin. Like a football, he's seeing it. then he is also very objective. He sees where the ball is pitched, line length, he accordingly moves and creates that much distance so that he can hit it to the boundary. If he has to go forward, he'll go. If he has to go backwards, he'll go. If he has to go sidewards, whatever he has to do, he'll do. But he'll create that distance, little bit. Then he controls it. So that little distance you've got to develop to be able to control your life. Otherwise you cannot. Otherwise you panic. This is what is happening in our life. Because we are too rajasic. Or we are completely frozen. Become tamasic. Don't know what to do. Can't do anything. Can't think at that time. Very difficult. I remember when I was in my 7th standard in the school, science teacher, his name was Mr. Rangarao. He gave his example in the class. He said, once in Chennai, you know, Madras Medical College, a lady patient was brought with a needle stuck in her eye. She was stitching, no? You stitched the torn cloth with that needle. By mistake, the needle went into her eyes. Okay. And now they have to remove the needle very carefully without making further damage. Now these things are not taught in schools, medical schools, how to, you know, get the needle out of a patient without damaging too much. He has to use certain things. Everybody was panicking. He said, okay, no problem. Make the patient lie on the bed flat. And then he said, bring a pulley. And he tied a pulley on top. And then he passed a thread over that pulley, brought it down, and then he sent it inside the needle's eye, you know. And then he tied it. And then on the other side, he was slowly, slowly adding weight. So straight the needle was coming up. Now they are not teaching on this. He was able to do that because he was objective. You see, to be able to use your intelligence, you need that objective.
Guruji, would it also not be training, like the Japanese who got out of the plane and the Japanese who have earthquakes? They stand calmly, quietly, wait their turn. Is that not part of training? We in India are not
training. Training will give you only with reference to that particular situation maybe. In the other situations, I can't train you. Like, all the time, I cannot be training for everything, no? Like when you're going for a mountaineering. Many things, of course, I do training. You also go through training. But once you are there, who will you call? There you got to be objective. You get disturbed, you can't handle it. So even for the training to be implemented, all these cricketers are trained so much. Football players, everybody is trained. See, I forget that years.
No, the Japanese as a race, Guruji, I'm talking. That it's probably
because they are living in such a situation, Amiji, please understand. They are living in the land which has so much of volcanic outbursts, all these things. So they have to train. They have to train. But even though you are trained, when the situation actually happens, I'm saying, apart from training, you also need a check. That's all I'm saying. I'm therefore not saying don't train. I'm not saying don't have intelligence. I'm not saying that. I'm saying even for the trainings to be implemented correctly, even for the planning and everything to be implemented perfectly at that time, you need to be objective. If you panic, if you give in to the pressure, you're finished. Nothing. You'll forget. You'll forget all the training. You won't be able to function on it. That's why that objectivity is needed. Therefore, even for the best of trainings to be implemented in the situation, you need the witnessing ability. That is a balanced mind, which is sattva. We'll discuss this further next week. Let's conclude. Om Purnamadha Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadhaya Purnamiva Vashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.